When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I mean, what's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful with my slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
All right, welcome into the PFF NFL show. Steve and Sam taking the day off today. So the It's Just Football boys are back at it again. Trevor Sikkema and Mike Renner here with you guys to talk a lot of football here on a Thursday. Mike, my friend, it's been so long since the Senior Bowl. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. It's a little different staring into a ring light than it is like staring back at a camera and the TV in our faces when it was It's Just Football, but going to be the same content, same great electric content nonetheless.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed. No, we've got a fun show for you guys here as we are filling in for Sam and Steve. We might take a little bit of shots of their absence throughout the hour, so you can find those little Easter eggs just when we kind of go through Mike's latest mock draft. He is the lead draft writer for PFF. And Mike, I'm sure you're sick of mock drafts at this point, but I don't know what to tell you, buddy. We got two more months to go for it. You recently released a post-Super Bowl mock draft. So the order, completely finalized. Beautiful words when it comes to the NFL draft process. How was it? Before we dig into this, and we're going to go through the list. We're going to start at one. We're going to go all the way through. We're even going to talk about some of the players that maybe didn't make the first round at the end of it, just to give you guys some extra names to know. But how was it filling out this post-Super Bowl mock draft with the order where it was? Was it difficult as you got towards the end? Because I feel like some years are easier than others to give teams exactly what they needed. But where are you in the draft process with being able to give some teams some good players that can fit their needs?
Yeah, this class, I don't think it's the strongest class. So once you get to the back end of the first round, you're going to see a ton of names cycling through just because there's not surefire first rounders. So when it's not surefire first rounders, it's going to be in the eye of the beholder then kind of at that point. So it's a lot of guys towards the 21 to 32 range that, or I guess 31 range, excuse me. I don't want to be incorrect here. That
shout out to Miami Dolphins.
There you go. Who are just like, kind of, it's like you're okay with it. And so I think you're going to see a lot of that towards the back end of this first round, a lot of different names in the back end of the mock. But this is probably my second favorite mock to do. Favorite mock is obviously the day of the draft or the day before the draft, whatever. My last mock draft is the favorite one. But this one's second favorite because you actually is the first time you get to like stack up and make decisions for teams. I think like previously you're kind of looking at it like what are good team fits, who's on the board here. Once the order is set though, you like actually have decisions to make for these teams where it's like, hey, this guy is still on the board here. I'm not just like plugging a guy because it's team fit. I'm actually going pick by pick and being like, if they're like, put me in the shoes of Chris Ballard, Ryan Poles, these guys at the top of the draft, what do I think they're actually going to do and have actual decisions to make because the order, as we said, is set for now until Aaron Rodgers comes out of his cave.
No, it's not a cave. It's a darkness retreat. Or is the darkness retreat in a cave? I can't keep up with what's going on here. I don't know. I can't keep up with Aaron Rodgers.
I'm picturing just like an outhouse and he's sitting on a toilet in the middle of, I don't know, nowhere, in the middle of California, probably.
So it's like solitary confinement, but fun. Like just mindset.
It's fun. I mean, he's probably having a great time. He'd probably have a great time in solitary confinement, too. That's a weird-ass dude. Let's be real.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's not the only quarterback trade that we're going to talk about here at the very top. But before we get into this mock, we'll dig right into it. But the chat is asking, which one of us is Sam and which one of us is Steve? Because if we're taking over for him today, like which one of you're taller than me. So I feel like you maybe have to be Steve in this scenario.
We don't have to do height roles to do it, but you're the host and Steve's the host role in that show.
Oh, that's true.
So it's a mix.
This is true. I don't quite have the hair, but I used to. Can I be, so do you, though. Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think. Were there other?
I got the obscure Florida Gators knowledge, so maybe I am Sam. Maybe I'm trying to think of, like,
who else has all been on the PFF podcast over the years, like, as, like, a host? Because, like, there was a point where it was kind of like a rotating mismatch back in, like, the mid-2000s. I think Zach Robinson was on it at some point. Bobby Slowick, New Houston Texans OC. Those guys were hosting or part of it at some point, to where maybe we're Zach Robinson and Bobby Slowick.
Could be.
I think those are better comps for us.
You know what? I heard that one episode Brad Pitt and Bradley Cooper hosted the pod. So actually, like, I'm gonna go with that. I'm gonna go that, like, that's the comp that we have here.
I'll stick with Zach Robinson myself.
Okay, that's fine. All right. Before we get into the picks themselves, we do have a little bit of a topic that I wanted to throw out at you for the number one overall selection. Right now, the Chicago Bears are picking number one overall, and the topic around them when it comes to the NFL draft is trade potential, right? What they are going to get for number one overall. They can't be sticking at number one. There's no way you can say, even though drafting Jalen Carter or Will Anderson, whoever you want to, that's a non-quarterback, there's so many teams that need a quarterback in this class that you figure they're probably going to move down a little bit. But as we figured we might get earlier this week, there was a report that maybe the Bears do end up trading Justin Fields. So I got to get your thoughts. What are your thoughts on the Bears potentially trading Justin Fields and selecting whatever quarterback they want? We would assume Bryce Young at number one overall. Do you think that would be smart? Do you think that's an area where you would explore? Or do you think it's totally crazy to trade Justin Fields?
I don't think it's totally crazy to trade Justin Fields. I do worry about his progress as a passer. And, you know, Bears fans can come at me all I want about, you know, the situation, the offensive line, the receiver talent, but none of that, you know, there's nothing to actually to point to on an NFL football field about him as a passer that has been encouraging in terms of growth from year one to year two. Now, as a runner, obviously, you know, buying into that is very easy. He's, you know, in terms of dynamism, right up there with Lamar Jackson, or was at least this past year. As a runner, and that just gives you a high floor as an offense, as we saw. You know, they had probably the worst supporting cast in the NFL, and were far from the worst offense in the NFL. I think they, you know, ended up right around a slightly below average offense on the whole, which is, you know, a testament to Justin Fields and how much he elevated the supporting cast. But there's nothing there to suggest that, you know, when he does have the receivers, when he does have the offensive line, all of a sudden he's going to flourish into this, you know, amazing passer. So I am worried, and I am worried that the Bears are so far away that by the time they figure out this roster and get it to, you know, tip-top shape, that is willing to compete for, or is able to compete for a Super Bowl, that if Justin Fields isn't the guy, you're then screwed because you're not going to be drafting high enough to get a quarterback. Or if Justin Fields is the guy, well, then you're paying him right away, and all of a sudden that sort of holy grail that is the quarterback in the rookie deal is over.
Yeah. Well, you guys are that's Mike's take on it. I want to hear from you guys in the comments, as well as you guys are watching the show, what you think about potentially trading Justin Fields, the window, the timing of it, what they could get back for him, all that good stuff. Y'all can have the conversation in the comments as we kind of go through things and kick off this mock draft here. All right. So I'll read off the top five, and then I'll kind of discuss it in parts. You have the Indianapolis Colts trading up from number four to number one overall to select Bryce Young. You then have the Houston Texans at number two taking Will Levis, not C.J. Stroud. Arizona Cardinals at three, you've got them going Jalen Carter from Georgia. Chicago Bears then at number four, you have them taking Will Anderson. And then the Seattle Seahawks at five, Tyree Wilson. We're going to talk about Tyree Wilson a ton, but ultimately, number one, you think the Colts, and we have mocked the Colts multiple times now, even go back to issues football, for them going number one overall. Do you still think that that's the strongest case? That's the team, and if you were to break up the pie percentage-wise out of 100, the one that has the greatest chance to be taken to be picking number one overall when it's said and done?
I just think it's, if everyone sees this quarterback class the way I do, with Bryce Young being clear tier one, the other guys being like a little behind, if you see it like that, if you know the evaluators end up seeing it like that, that's the team that makes the most sense in my eyes. Because one, you jump a division rival. Two, the Bears are still in position to get a top defensive line prospect. And three, you're in Indianapolis Colts. You can't just sit around and be like, hey, we're okay with whoever falls to us. You've got to be proactive. You've had no quarterback for a while. And if you screw this one up and you're Chris Ballard, you're gone. So from that perspective, again, assume that everyone sees the class the way I do. That's how I see it playing out. Now, Chris Ballard has kind of a type. Like, he is a tools-based drafter. Right. Pretty much every single position. You know, Alec Pierce, even wide receiver, he goes for guys like Alec Pierce, Paris Campbell, although he did draft, you know, Michael Pittman, but like, has drafted guys who have high-end physical capabilities consistently. There's a guy in this class who has high-end capabilities at the quarterback position. It's Will Levis. You know, so he very well may trend towards Will Levis and say, hey, we're happy as heck to sit at four and let him fall to us because we don't think the Texans are going to draft him. And then at that point, if the Texans aren't going to draft him, he's going to fall into our lap. So I could see that happening very well. And then at that point, I think the best deal for the Bears, if you're getting a trade, is just to flip with the Texans to make sure no one trades back. Because if you are number one pick and you are trading down, if it is just a pure one spot pick swap, usually you're not getting, you know, the surplus value that we've talked about a lot that, you know, the Dolphins got with the 49ers when they traded back, that the Rams had to give up when they trade up with the Titans. Like, if it's just a one position pick swap, those historically go just based off of Jimmy Johnson's trade chart. You just get like one extra pick because, you know, if you're the Houston Texans, you're basically saying you're getting the same guy. You know, why am I giving you excess value to go down one spot? So I think that could be how we see this play out, is just Bears pick up maybe one pick, one extra pick from the Texans, and the Texans go up and get their guy.
Yeah. And the Bears are, you know, I do think that a trade with the Texans could make sense because certainly the Texans have that pick at the very beginning of the second round, and Chicago might be trying to recoup that from the Chase Claypool trade. So at that point, Chicago's only moving down one spot. They're still probably getting the guy that they want. We assume that it's going to be Will Anderson or Jalen Carter. And then you get that extra second round pick as well as the other picks that you have throughout the rest of the draft. So I do still think that scenario makes sense. Sometimes people on both sides, when I propose the Houston Texans and Chicago Bears trade, they're like, oh, it doesn't make sense for the Texans to move up to number one. Well, no, it kind of does. Like, if there's, like you said, if teams see quarterbacks the way that you do, which I do as well, where it is clearly Bryce Young at number one, you go get that dude. You don't let one or two picks in the day two, day three range get in the way of that. So I think that it makes sense for the Texans. And then I think, again, it would make sense for the Chicago Bears, although I think the Bears are a little bit further away. So if the Colts are going to up their offer by a lot, including a day one pick next year, that one's a little bit more alluring to me. And I'm kind of with you. I do think that the Colts ultimately can give up the best package of deals and draft assets to be able to move up to number one. So you got to take a Bryce Young. You got Will Levis going number two. You get the Arizona Cardinals going Jalen Carter at number three instead of Will Anderson. So I got to ask you, Jalen Carter versus Will Anderson, first non-quarterback off the board. What went into the debate here with the Cardinals specifically? A lot of new leadership there going with Carter at number three.
There's two things. One is that, truthfully, I think Carr is a better prospect. And I think a lot of people around the league will see it the same way. And two, they drafted two guys in day two last year on the edge. They have zero dudes on the interior. This is as bereft an interior defensive line as exists in the NFL right now. So if you are weighing where we have options and you're the Arizona Cardinals, got options on the edge that could develop. Maje Sanders, blanking on the other name that they drafted in the second round last year from San Diego State, who...
Oh, Cam Thomas.
Still blanking on the name. Yes, Cam Thomas. Bang. Thank you. That's
there you
why.
Go. There you go. The alley-oop.
Why the duo keeps going. But you have options on the edge. You have no options on the interior. So that's what went into the decision, but I could see them going either way. Those guys are both, you know, slam dunks. You're taking one, and you're happy as hell about it.
Yeah, so I at that point, there's not really a debate with the Chicago Bears one pick later at number four, going... To Will Anderson instead of Jalen Carter. It's 1-2 flip-flopping. By the way, I don't think I said this at the top, but you guys can read this as well. You don't have to just listen to the entire podcast. You can read along with it and see what Mike's selections were. If you go over to pff.com and you click the NFL draft tab, you guys can see his latest post-Super Bowl mock draft, so you can go through this bad boy with us. I do want to get to number five because the Seahawks, to me, are such an interesting team at number five, and it feels like a lot of people are honing in on any defensive lineman that they prefer at this spot, but it keeps coming back to, like, do people believe in Miles Murphy enough for him to be number five overall, or is it Tyree Wilson? You have them going with Tyree Wilson, but just what's your overall thoughts on Seattle's approach to number five? Do you think it has to be defensive line? You think corner could be in the mix because it's a strong corner class? Do you even think a trade down could be a possibility for them at number five? We don't often talk about that because they have an extra first round pick already, but could you see maybe a move from John Schneider in the front office there? What do you think with the Seahawks approach? What do you think it's going to be at number five?
I would love a trade down, truthfully. I mean, everyone says they have draft capital already. Well, it's, yeah, they have draft capital, but they also have a lot of needs. So I would love a trade down just because after, you know, those, the dudes are off the board, the Jalen Carter, the Will Anderson, I don't see a massive next tier. I don't, there's, the next tier includes a lot of players, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of, I'd say, like 8 to 10. It's a big next tier, and it's a clear gap from that tier to the tier one. So if you move down 5 to 6 spots, I don't think you're getting a vastly different player. I lean Tyree Wilson. I lean the defensive lineman one, because as you alluded to, it is a strong corner class. And when it's a strong corner class, that means that, like, you could still get one at 20. And they're obviously in a nice situation where you have those two first round picks. Whereas the edge class, Tyree Wilson is a clear tier above anyone you're getting in this edge class at pick 20. And I don't think it's really close. And I think he's great for the Seattle in that he's versatile and he fits a need that is just massive. You know, they've been begging for help along the defensive line seemingly for, like, you know, ever since Michael Bennett left, ever since Cliff Avril left. Like, who have they had that's a difference maker there? Since those guys, there hasn't been one. So, yeah, Tyree Wilson, I think, can be that guy. Obviously, I'd still put him in kind of a developmental project-ish territory, but if you're going to be a developmental project, being 6'6", 275 with 7-foot wingspan and some real explosiveness is a pretty good start, I'll say.
Yeah, and that's the kind of player it feels like the Seahawks love, right? Those just bigger, super-sized, unique athletes that you take a chance on, right? DK was that kind of a player. Tariq Woolen was that kind of a player. Like, it just feels like their mold to take a chance on those guys that just present unique physical attributes, whether it is athleticism or just overall frame, like how big and how long they are. So I think that Tyree Wilson certainly makes sense for what the Seahawks are going for, but I was curious to hear what your thoughts were on the rest of the options. You touched on corner. We hit on corner a little bit there and how strong of a cornerback class this is. At number six, you have the Detroit Lions going with Devon Witherspoon, the cornerback from Illinois. He feels like a lot of people CB1 at this point, but this pick specifically, I feel like Lions fans are getting locked into it to the point where 2 months from now, if Devon Witherspoon is not on the Lions, they're going to be disappointed. Like, they're going to be sad about it. So overall, do you think that this mock draft selection can stand the test of time over the next 2 months and become a reality for him to be a Detroit Lion?
Yeah, not just Lions fans. I will be upset. I will be crying on draft day. And I'm a Packers fan. And I want this to happen just purely for the fun to watchness of it. He is the feistiest corner in this draft. Like, he's the most Dan Campbell-ish corner in this draft class. Like, he gets after it every single play. He's the trash talker. He's in your face. And he's that press corner that you can line up and press and not have to worry about. And they obviously hope they have one of those guys on the other side in Jeffrey Okuda. Adding a second one in Devon Witherspoon could take this defense to the next level because they're the fourth press heaviest team in the NFL. Like, that's their bread and butter. That's what they want to line up and do every single play. Didn't have the horses to do so last season. Witherspoon gives you that guy. I think we've hit this. I've mentioned this stat 10 or so times already. I'll mention it 100 times before the draft hits. He allowed 1 yard in press coverage last year. Over 200 snaps in press coverage. He allowed 1 yard. He is nasty at the line of scrimmage. That's all I will say about that. It's going to happen. We are going to manifest this pick.
Yeah, but have you said that stat on the PFF NFL show? Because
I don't think I have.
Then boom.
It's a new.
There it is. There it is. People are hearing it for the first time. That's all you need to know. No, Devon Witherspoon, one of my favorite prospects in this class. No doubt about it. When I used to work on Locked On NFL Draft, cover the draft, myself and John Ledyard, we used to have like the all chirp team every year where it was just like guys that you could visibly see on tape that were getting in other players' faces and talking crap. Devon Witherspoon would be on that list. He would be a first team all chirp selection for this NFL draft. And you love to see that from the cornerback position. I'm moving two spots down. Vegas Raiders, they took Paris Johnson Jr. At number 7. So no quarterback selection there, but I think offensive line, obviously a pretty big need for them. So I understand that one. Falcons at 8, you also have them going offensive line. And I see a lot of defensive selections for the Falcons, whether it's corner, whether it's safety. Like, I've seen Brian Branch, and so I'm classifying him maybe as a safety. I've seen defensive line, especially for the Atlanta Falcons, but you've got them going offensive trenches. Talk to me about how you got to this point with an offensive line selection and Peter Skoronski specifically going to the Falcons at 8.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I'm projecting Skoronski even in this scenario to be a guard. But now maybe Caleb McGarry walks in free agency, but I doubt it. I think they're going to re-sign him. I just think he's too much of a scheme fit for what they want to do. And that's why I have Skoronski going here, is because of the schematic fit of Arthur Smith's offense. It's like they are the most movement-heavy offensive line demanding. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. They're like, they get their offensive linemen on the move more than anyone else in the NFL. If you watch the Falcons at all, it's stretch zone. Pitches to the outside, get these guys in space, pull our linemen. You need to be an athletic offensive lineman. Peter Skoronski is that. He can fit in at guard. And then when you are the run heaviest team in the NFL, the way the Falcons were last year, when you want that to be your bread and butter, and obviously Arthur Smith coming from Tennessee to here, enough track record to know that he's going to. That's going to be what he wants to do. He is not going to, even with Kyle Pitts and Drake London, drop back his quarterback and rip it 40 plus times a game. They are going to run the football. And when you have that, well, shit, it behooves you to have an elite dominant offensive line. You can't just bank on having this average offensive line put up big numbers in the running game. No, you need to be dominant up front. Peter Skoronski brings you, if you slot him in at left guard, Lindstrom at right guard, you can establish dominance on the ground to a degree that, you know, if you just waited till the third round and selected Jalen Mayfield the way they did a couple of years ago, that might not give you the dominance. That might not pay off the way Peter Skoronski can. So that's why I like the Skoronski fit. Now, 8's a little rich, obviously, for a pick like that, but it's one of those where it just the sort of the situation dictates a pick like this.
Yeah, the rule with the trenches is, you know, if you've got a need at a premium position or you want to really upgrade at a premium position, you got to take one early. It's just not often that you can bet on these guys. And I'm not saying that we don't see third, fourth, fifth, sixth, wherever rounders hit when it comes to O-line, D-line, sometimes even quarterback, cornerback, whatever it is. But the numbers would back it up that if you want one of these guys to be an impact player, you got to take them early. So, hey, if that's an area where the Falcons would want to get even better, make a strength even stronger, if you will, I think taking them early would probably be how they want to attack it. We're going a little bit further down. You got the Carolina Panthers taking CJ Stroud at 9. Philadelphia Eagles going Christian Gonzalez, second corner off the board from Oregon at number 10. 11. We're going to take a pit stop right here because you got the Tennessee Titans taking Lucas Van Ness, the defensive lineman from Iowa. My question to you is just, are you worried at all about the lack of starts from Lucas Van Ness? How he was an interior player over the last couple of years. Then they move him out to edge. He's kind of more like a specialized guy. Man, the flashes from him are crazy. Some of that speed to power work is awesome from Lucas Van Ness. He does feel like a Tennessee Titan, if you will. But are you worried about some of the lack of time that he has spent on the edge with him being a top 12 pick here?
Oh, yeah. I'm very worried about Lucas Van Ness and just like what he becomes at the next level. I guess I'm worried, but I guess of any prospect in this draft class, he is the single weirdest projection. Because as you said, majority of snaps over the past 2 years are in the interior, but he's 275 pounds and like pretty high cut. Like he's not an interior player in the NFL, just flat out. That's not where he's going to line up, not 100% of the time, and just be effective. You know, he's not going to be playing nose the way he did Iowa. So you're going to have to have kind of a plan B. But the way the Titans kind of scheme up that defensive line, it's a lot of stunts, a lot of slants, a lot of kind of schemed rushes where he is probably the best guy in this entire draft class at schemed rushes like that, where it's just be a bulldozer. Yes, and he is.
Truly,
like that's,
yes.
That's all, because that's all he did at Iowa. You know, his tape is hilarious because it's every single play is the exact same thing. It's him charging, you know, getting as low as humanly possible, putting two hands out, and then trying to walk whoever's blocking him straight back into either the running back or the quarterback. It doesn't change whether it was run or pass, it's the same thing. So in that scheme, I just think he's too perfect of a fit. It's kind of like the Skoronski pick where it's just like, for what they do, he just makes a lot of sense. And they're going to cut Bud Dupree. Harold Landry's coming off an ACL. The need's going to be there. You know, they're going to need a player like that on their defensive line to maintain their dominance. So I just think he makes a lot of sense, even if the offensive tackle need is about as glaring as it exists in the NFL.
Right. Right now. Right. No, but you know, you've got in this mock, You know, I understood it. You got Paris Johnson Jr. off the board. You got Peter Skoronski off the board. You know, you could go out Broderick Jones, I guess, here if you wanted to. You've got him going 13 to the Jets. I think that's certainly an option at 11. But anytime you get a defensive lineman who's pro comparison is an actual bulldozer, then yeah, I think that Mike Vrabel's going to be interested. You know, I think that we just got to be honest with ourselves there. So I wanted to ask you about that one for sure. You got wide receiver one is Quentin Johnson coming off the board at 12. Then I mentioned you got the Jets going offensive tackle at 13. I think that's a solid one. Patriots, Brian Branch, the versatile defensive back from Alabama going 14. Your Packers end up getting Miles Murphy at 15. So he does end up being a top 15 pick. I do want to go a little bit further down, but you got Brian Bresee going to the Washington Commanders at 16. Steelers going Joey Porter Jr. with the legacy pick at 17. Anthony Richardson to the Detroit Lions at number 18. Talk to me about this one. I mean, was this a matter of, because normally we're getting very familiar with seeing back-to-back defensive picks for the Lions at 6 and then at 18 in mock drafts. Was this more of a, not really a player on the board on the defensive side of things, mainly I'm guessing along the defensive trenches that you loved, or was it a, hey, Ben Johnson's back. You know, you still have Jared Goff there to start next year. Don't have to start Anthony Richardson right away. Tell me what went into Richardson being the selection at 18 for the Detroit Lions.
It's just a swing, right? And it's kind of a luxury pick. You treat number 6 as your first overall pick, and then it's kind of just like, you know, a little icing on the cake, a little cherry on top that's just like, hey, we're going to try to take a swing at the bat, because Jared Goff, for as good as he was last year, didn't lead you guys to the playoffs. And has consistently, over the course of his career, been fool's gold when it comes to that. He can look great for stretches, but he's going to disappoint you in the end. And I think if you are Brad Holmes, GM of the Detroit Lions, you can't just bank your career yet again to a Jared Goff and see where that takes you. You have to give yourself options. And Anthony Richardson is the ultimate option. That, sure, you know, am I saying he's going to develop into a franchise quarterback? Not by any means. He's got a ways to go. But he's a guy that can play year one at, you know, I'm not going to say running back, but like he can get snaps and be that what Lamar Jackson was for the Ravens out the gate, where it's like, you know, short yardage, goal line situations. You have a creative offense coordinator, Ben Johnson. You have a guy who's willing to do a bunch of different things offensively, whatever it takes to put points on the scoreboard. Anthony Richardson is a guy who can come in and be offense for you. He can put points on the scoreboard, even if he's not the quarterback holding the ball every single play. So I do think it's just an exciting piece of the puzzle to add to an offense that is one of the most exciting offenses in the NFL right now. So it's a swing of the bat that I take if I was the GM of the Detroit Lions, hoping that they agree with me.
I feel like Anthony Richardson could literally play the Taysom Hill role in his rookie season. You know, just like this weird gadget kind of player who lines up at quarterback, but is he a wildcat guy? Is he actually taking the carry? Are you playing power with him? He can throw the ball. We know that he can. I just feel, I don't know. I feel as though if a creative offensive coordinator like Ben Johnson could get their hands on an Anthony Richardson, maybe we do see like this Taysom Hill kind of player from his rookie season before he ends up being the guy later on.
And I'm curious to see if, So this year's Eagles team, obviously, offensively, and what they did with the short yardage stuff, you know, how effective that was and how much when you got into third and threes, third and fours, it was just automatic when you had a guy like Jalen Hurts who could get 2 yards every sneak and who could be such a weapon with his legs and short yardage that if we see a rise of these short yardage quarterbacks, I'm not you know, just calling Jalen Hurts short yardage quarterback, not just calling Anthony Richardson that long term. I'm saying, like, can that be a part of your offense? Because you're just that level of effectiveness that a guy like that can bring to the table compared to a Jared Goff, who's, you know, not going to be, no one's going to fear him on an option, does not have the power behind him to move any pile in a sneak game. So I just think it's a weapon that the high leverage plays that it does change the game in are ones that you need to win, and you need to win Super Bowls nowadays.
All right, so Tampa Bay Buccaneers at number 19. Yeah, I'm taking cornerback Deontay Banks from Maryland. Certainly, if they lose Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy Bunting, that one will make a lot of sense, although Tampa A lot of needs racking up for that Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. Yeah. I don't know how pretty the picture is for them in the long term, or at least in the short term, I should say. I do want to take a pit stop again at the Seattle Seahawks number 20. Yeah, them taking Tyree Wilson up at number 5. So you went defensive line at number 5. Got to go with defensive line again. But Kalijah Kansi, very opposite from the reasons why you would pick Tyree Wilson than why you would also have a guy like Kalijah Kansi, an undersized interior defensive lineman on the board for Seattle. I love Kansi. I think he's a fun player. But what are your thoughts overall with him going to Seattle here at number 20 for sure, but also the range in which you could see Kalijah Kansi being taken? Because, we've seen – I think Mel Kiper had him, what, number 10 overall to the Philadelphia Eagles in one of his mock drafts. So what is your realistic range for Kalijah Kansi in this class? And then maybe chatting a little bit about him being a fit to the Seattle Seahawks at 20.
I think we'll know a lot more post-combine, right? If he goes to the combine, he goes like 4.9, 40, 29-inch vertical. I don't think he's going in the first round. Like that's a good athlete, but for 280, you better be like – you better be close to Aaron Donald, right? You better be a high-end athlete because of how demanding the defense tackle position is. And truthfully, I think he is. So I think after the combine, we'll be coming away saying Kalijah Kansi is going to be a first-round pick. Now, how high can he go? I don't see top 10. I just don't see anyone willing to go to bat for a six-footer at the defense tackle position in the top 10. But I do think, in this draft, somewhere as high as, I don't want to say even like top 14, 15. I think Commanders, probably not even Commanders with their defensive tackles, but like I could see Detroit is where like it starts with him, and then anywhere to the back end of the first round.
I like
that's
Detroit.
The range for Kansi. Yeah,
I like Detroit. You get to put him next to Liam McNeil. Liam McNeil could play more of the nose. You can slide him over. I think that makes a lot of sense. We do have a question from the comments. We talked a lot about the cornerback class. Jacob asked this, why is Kelee Ringo not viewed as a top cornerback in this class? So mainly with you picking Deontay Banks over a Kelee Ringo. And then we've got some more comments in here. JS said Ringo got cooked against OSU, so everybody's dropping him. Is that the reason why? I'd love to hear from you and your thoughts overall with Kelee Ringo.
I don't think it's because he got cooked against just OSU. And now that's not good when you get cooked by anyone at the cornerback position, right? Because next year, everyone you face will be, as good as that one guy you face that beat you, right? That's just the nature of the beast of the wide receiver position, is that you get to the NFL, not everyone's a Marvin Harrison Jr., but like you're going to face a Marvin Harrison Jr. 8 times a year. You're going to face, you have to guard those number ones. And so if you're getting cooked by those dudes, that's worrisome. But it's also that he does not have the short area quicks that you like to see from an outside cornerback. He does not have the ball awareness you like to see from an outside cornerback. And again, when you aren't shut down in college, you have 552 yards last season. You just worry about that guy once he gets to the league. And projects at corner are, they can pay off. But, we saw Tariq Woolen go in the 5th last year. It's projects at corner can't see the football field because of the nature of the position. They just can't. No one's going to, at a high leverage position like corner, be throwing out a guy who's just not ready. So that's the worrisome thing with Kelee Ringo and why I think you're seeing him not in so many first round mocks anymore.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. I agree that there's more concerns with Ringo than just the OSU tape. Like Marvin Harrison Jr. cooking somebody. That happens plenty, but it's more than just the OSU game. I would agree with you. I think that there's plenty of tape to show some concerns of why in a really strong corner class, why he is being moved down the board a little bit here. Okay. I want to move 2 spots down. You got the Los Angeles Chargers at number 21, taking your boy, Michael Mayer. All right. Tight end going to them. All right, cool. Gerald Everett leaves. Great. Plug and play. Everybody wants to know in a PFF mock draft where Bijan Robinson is going to go. And you had him going number 22 overall to the Baltimore Ravens. Is this J.K. Dobbins slander, Mike? Because I'm not going to allow it. I'm not here for the J.K. Dobbins slander. So go ahead, sell me on Bijan Robinson to the Baltimore Ravens.
It's a little Rob, J.K. Dobbins slander. I'll say that. I mean, he was very effective down the stretch in the playoffs. But, obviously the injury history with him is very concerning at this point.
Sure.
But Bijan Robinson is just like, when you run as much as they do, And obviously, you know, no more Greg Roman, but they're not going to stop running. So when you run as much as they do, the running back position is all of a sudden more valuable. It's pretty obvious. We say, you know, usually you want to pass the football. You know, you don't want to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands, out of Aaron Rodgers' hands, out of these other guys' hands. But with Lamar Jackson, like the biggest, you know, what he does, what he brings to the table, what makes him so special, one of the biggest reasons why, you know, he's an MVP is that he brings the level of your running game up multiple notches, you know. And they've done a lot better job in this past year of cobbling together, you know, that's the top probably 10 offensive line by the end of the season there in Baltimore. So the pieces are in place to make this rushing game as effective as passing games throughout the league. And then when it's that level of dominance in the running game, that gives you so many more favorable looks in the passing game that a guy like Bijan Robinson can be worth it, in my opinion, with the pick number 22 overall. But that's, again, it's rich for running back. Scenarios are the same, though. I'm not drafting Bijan Robinson if I'm, you know, someone like the Buffalo Bills just to fix my running game. That's not how that works. You've got to have the pieces in place, and then the value starts to kick in because then teams just have to account for it. So Bijan Lamar in the same backfield is something that defenses just have to account for, and that's a scary thought.
We got a little bit of a wide receiver run here after Baltimore's pick at number 22. You got the Minnesota Vikings taking Jordan Addison at number 23. You got the New York Giants at 25, taking Jaxon Smith-Njigba. You got the Dallas Cowboys at 26, taking Jalin Hyatt. And in between them at 24, you even have the Jacksonville Jaguars taking Dalton Kincaid, who is a receiving tight end. So boom, 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 four pass catching weapons there off the board. Talk to me about how you view just overall this wide receiver class. And you could touch on a couple of these fits here, the ones that you maybe really liked out of that bunch, but just overall the wide receiver group, because this is a handful of guys now going towards the back end of the first round with only Quentin Johnston as the wide receiver who went in the top 20 here. Your overall thoughts on what you could think of this pass catching group?
Yeah, I don't think there's any surefire studs in this receiving class. There's no Jamar Chase. There's no, I even would put Drake London in that category last year. Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams. I thought those guys were just like, in their role, they were awesome. I don't think there's anyone I feel to that degree about. You know, I have Quentin Johnston, I have questions about his route tree and his play strength. With Jordan Addison, I have questions about his size and how that's going to translate to the NFL and his ball skills and drops and how much he can actually get outside his frame and make plays. With Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I have massive questions about speed. Like, can he be anything other than a slot receiver in the league? Like, those guys come with big question marks. But again, the nature of the wide receiver position is that, like, you get put in positions to succeed in the NFL. You're not drafting Quentin Johnston to run a full route tree from the slot. You're an idiot if you are. You know, you're drafting him to run go balls on the outside. And when you do that, when you put him in that scenario, I think he's going to be very good. You're not drafting Jaxon Smith-Njigba to then run Quentin Johnston's role. You're drafting him to play the slot in a slot-heavy role that's going to be featured in your offense. And I think with Jordan Addison, you've seen enough from him that you're drafting him to be a route runner. You're drafting him to do, you know, blaze outs and things that guys like Quentin Johnston necessarily can't do, that you're putting him in that role, kind of like how the Jets put Garrett Wilson in that role this past season. So I think they're all sort of role-specific players, but I think all three of those guys are very much going to excel when put into that role. So I do think because of that role specificity, you see them maybe fall a little compared to last year's class, but they're all going in the first round still. I'd be floored if any of those three, and I'd even throw Zay Flowers in that mix too, any of them fall out of the first round.
Yeah, did you get Zay in here? Oh yeah, you did get Zay in here. Zay, okay. Yeah. You have him at 29 going to the New Orleans Saints, which is a new mock draft team for us. Over the last couple of months, we didn't even think that we were going to talk about the New Orleans Saints in the first round. And of course, the trade with Sean Payton, they get Denver selection number 29. So you've got them taking Zay there. Ooh, man. Zay Flowers, Chris Olave?
I know, right? That one is one of my favorite picks. That one's just
I like that, man.
Derek Carr throwing to him. But separators, like that's a separating receiving duo that I don't think even Derek Carr could screw up.
Oh, come on,
the more interesting discussion to me,
Derek Carr slander has gone too far. We've gone too far. We as a society have gone too far in that direction against Derek Carr.
Probably a little. But the more interesting discussion to me is actually tight end position in this year's class, because there's three just like uniquely different tight ends at the top. I don't consider Darnell Washington one of the top three just because I don't think you're ever going to get like a top tier receiving threat out of him. You know, it's too big, too clunky in his route phase. Just like, he's going to have to be a specific role. Whereas Mayer, Kincaid, and Musgraves,
yeah,
are all, they, I could see them all turning into 1,000-yard guys, right? In some sort of capability. Mayer is your, you know, underneath sort of reliable route runner that's going to, you know, chain mover, safety net, whatever you want to call that. Kincaid's mm-hmm. just like, he moves like a wide receiver. He's just like a big wide receiver, but can he block? Is our team's going to treat him as just a wide receiver? And then with Musgrave, it's like, that guy is an athlete, the likes of which you rarely see at the tight end position. His straight line speed is insane for a guy 6'6", 250 plus. But can he run routes? We don't know. So I think this tight end class is a lot more interesting because those are three guys that type of prospects that I don't think come around every single year at the tight end position. So curious to see where they end up come draft time. And I snuck them all three here into this mock.
Yeah, you've got Musgrave. I mean, a little spoiler here, because Musgrave's the last pick at number 31 to the Kansas City Chiefs. You know what? I always feel myself getting mad at every single Kansas City Chiefs draft pick. As if the Chiefs shouldn't be allowed to have first round picks. And I'm not even,
more to this.
Right. And like, I'm not even like a Chiefs hater at all whatsoever. Yeah. It's just every single first round mock draft with the Chiefs, I'm just like, of course the Chiefs get to draft in the first round again. Like, yeah. Like, why? And I don't know. I always feel myself.
I mean, adding Luke Musgrave, I'm obviously skipping ahead, but like adding him, who is faster than, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster to that offense. In terms of the vertical threat, it's like you put him and Kelsey on the field at the same time. Those are two wide receivers. And you have an offensive right. line that's one of the best in the run game in the NFL if they can re-sign Orlando Brown, where it's like, my God, what do you even do? What do you even do against that offense if Musgrave actually turns into a player?
You lose, Mike. That's what you do. That's what the rest of the NFL learned already this year. That's what they're going to learn continually over the next half decade with Patrick Mahomes. The answer to the question is you lose. Cincinnati Bengals, they're a team that's hoping they could slow down the Kansas City Chiefs every single year that they're out there, at least if they have Joe Burrow. You have them taking Keon White, the defensive lineman from Georgia Tech. We got to watch Keon White a little bit when we were at the Senior Bowl. I know that you watched plenty of tape on him. Feels like a bull in a china shop at times, but what's your just overall thought with Keon White and his profile being that of somebody worthy of a back end of the first round selection?
Yeah, so he's 6'5", 286, but he plays off the edge, and he can play on the interior too, because he is just like this unbelievable athlete. He had like the fastest GPS time at the Senior Bowl of a defensive lineman by like 3 miles an hour or something. And he's 286. So the guy can really move at that size. Started his career tight end, switched to D-line, I believe 4 years ago when he was at Old Dominion, transferred to Georgia Tech, got hurt, missed 2 years, back now. It's like, he's a project, sure. But the Bengals love versatility. I think their calling card under Lou Anarumo has been to add as many guys who can do as many things as possible, whether it's their linebacking core, whether it's their cornerbacks, safeties, as you know, Dax Hill last year, Cam Taylor Britt. The draft picks were two versatile guys. And then along the defensive line, I think they've coveted that as well and will continue to covet that. And he's a guy who can go from edge to three tech, and you don't miss a beat with him. So I think that's a guy that they haven't drafted a defensive lineman in the first or second round since 2013, I believe. But he's a guy that I think could break that streak for them.
Okay. I mean, I don't hate that logic, right? I mean, like, I look at the Cincinnati Bengals, and I'd love for him to pick up offensive tackle. But if it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit. Which is, I guess that kind of brings me into a question about who didn't make this mock draft, right? I guess to touch on the picks that I didn't name specifically, you got the Buffalo Bills at 27 taking Osiris Torrance from Florida, the interior offensive lineman there. We just touched on the Bengals getting Keon White at 28. Zay Flowers going to the New Orleans Saints at 29. Eagles for their second first round selection, you have them taking Nolan Smith, the edge rusher from Georgia. And then for that last pick, unfairly, the Kansas City Chiefs taking tight end Luke Musgrave. We got no Darnell Wright in this mock draft. No Anton Harrison. I don't know if people are thinking that DeJuan Jones might be a borderline first round pick, but obviously, like, he's not on the board there. Was offensive line in consideration at all for the Cincinnati Bengals at 28, or do you just not think that any of those guys are really first round caliber players?
I do think DeJuan Jones would be the one guy I'd be interested in. Okay. You know, with how they kind of flipped the script on their run game last year. Like, DeJuan Jones on the right side would be interesting. Like, they ran a ton of power, a ton of counter, a ton of gap scheme stuff down the stretch, and he's like gap scheme king. Like, that guy can down block for days, and I'm just very excited to see how he looks at the NFL level. But I still think they are more early day two kind of prospects. And truthfully, it's like any offensive lineman coming in, as I think they've seen, you know, with their draft picks of late, is not going to be good at that point in the draft. He's not going to be an upgrade. He's not going to expect a guy at that point in the draft to hit the ground running and be able to block NFL players at tackle position is very, very low. So I think where they end up going is free agency to bolster this offensive line if they do something.
Is there a player on along similar lines and not just offensive line? We can open it up to everything, but is there a player that you really thought about getting into the back end of the first round? Like a name that you really love? I noticed, you know, Will McDonald's not in here. BJ Ojulari, a Tank Dell, if you think he's worth it, a Mazi Smith, a Tyreek Stevenson, a Josh Downs, a Steve Avila. Like, I'm just going down the big board right here. Are there specific one or two or three guys that you really thought about maybe getting in the back end of the first round?
Yeah, the first name that came to mind was Will McDonald. I was looking for a spot for him when it came to Will McDonald versus Nolan Smith for the Eagles. Lee Nolan Smith, but I think that one's a little bit of a toss-up. Also, one name you didn't say that I was thinking about sneaking in there was Steve Avila, the TCU guard. If, you know, any of the teams at the back end of the first round, I could see, you know, I had Osiris Torrance going to the Bills. I could see teams having Avila over Torrance as the top guard in this class. I think he's that talented. And then probably the last guy I'll highlight here that I debated whether or not to put him in the first round was Mazi Smith from Michigan. I think he's going to move up draft boards, especially after the combine, especially after what he put on tape towards the end of the year in the Ohio State game, the Georgia game. He is strong as an ox. The guy does not get moved off the line of scrimmage. I think for a lot of two-gapping run teams that really are playing those light boxes with their linebackers and safeties and really need those guys up front to stop the run, Mazi Smith is the best, you know, run defending DT after Jalen Carter in this draft class.
All right, there we go. Well, in case you guys tuned in late, or if you missed any of the picks that we were going over throughout the first round, you can check it all out over at pff.com. You just search the mock draft tab. You go over to Renner's most recent post Super Bowl mock draft, and you can see all that goodness there. Is there a favorite? I don't even, you know, I'm throwing this on you at the end. Is there one pick that you had in this entire mock draft that you were like, oh, that one feels good? Like, I know you talked about Zay Flowers being one of them, but like, it's just there one that you were like, oh yeah, that one's easy as pie. I'm already writing the analysis for that one in my head.
Well, the one that I went to, obviously as a Packers fan, with Miles Murphy going to the Packers, that like when I made that connection in my head, don't think I'm going to be able to get it out of my head until draft day. Like, I think that, you know, obviously if they don't, you know, go to wide receiver or tight end, which they're going to disappoint me and not go wide receiver, tight end once again. But Miles Murphy is exactly like what they've drafted. They have drafted these Nick Perrys, these Rashawn Garys along the defensive line, these guys who are just like explosive big athletes. And can they rush the passer? Who knows? Miles Murphy couldn't last year, but they're going to try. They're going to take that chance on those dudes. So Miles Murphy, I mean, the comp in the draft guide is Rashawn Gary for him. Is a very similar caliber of athlete with really no earthly idea how to rush the passer at this point. But when you're that big and that explosive, it doesn't take much to be effective. And we saw Rashawn Gary develop into that. I think they are very willing to pull the trigger on those dudes and bet on it. So Miles Murphy, the Packers, is one where it's like, if I were to bet on a pick outside the top 10 happening, that's one I really like.
I like what Don said in the chat here. lot of really great chat interaction today. Some really good convos. Mike, this was fun, man. It was good to dust off the cameras and the mic and to talk mock draft again with you. This is a good time. Make sure you guys are following Mike on all the social media platforms, following the NFL show, following everything that he's putting out over at pff.com. If you want to follow my draft work, we also have a draft podcast specifically called NFL Stock Exchange. We got a new YouTube channel. It's not on this YouTube channel. It used to be. Now we're kind of branching out doing our own channel because, I don't know, we're just trying to keep things a little bit separate. We're trying to grow both things in different ways. So if you want to follow that draft podcast, you can. It's youtube.com/@NFL Stock Exchange. So anybody who's watching this and wondering where the hell the Stock Exchange show went, that's where it went. So we're just trying to grow each channel in their own ways and wanted to make sure that I pointed you guys to that. Mike, you got anything else before we get out of here, my friend?
No, just go get a draft guide. There you go.
Yes. Guide. Yes. The draft guide is out for everyone who has not downloaded it yet. It is the most wonderful time of the year. I know we use that phrase all the time, but when the draft guide comes out, you need to go get it. Mike and so many others put incredible amount of hours into that bad boy, and it is extensive. It will give you everything that you want to know about the 2023 NFL draft. Victor asked who is the chat champ today. So, Victor, it's you, just for asking. A little shout out to It's Just Football. Victor is the chat champ on the show today. I believe Sam and Steve are going to be back tomorrow. I haven't been told that for sure. Maybe it'll be Mike and I. Maybe it'll be just me. Maybe we'll just let the stream run and you guys can run the whole show in the chat. I don't know, but make sure you guys tune into whatever the NFL show is going to look like tomorrow. I'm Trevor Sikkema. That's Mike Renner. Appreciate you guys watching the NFL show. We'll see you guys next time.